This is a letter from Peter Stanley to Jim Stanley, mailed from Saigon on 16 February 1964. I tried to get hold of a tape machine, Jimmy, but I was unable to find any that operate at any speed except 1 7/8, I believe it is. These are the portable type. The others we have not purchased because of the difficulty in finding outlets with the appropriate current or finding regulators to go into the outlets. We have also been on the go almost continually since I arrived, and I haven't had much time to do much shopping around. For the last week, we have been down in the Mekong Delta, traveling from one point to another, spending less than 24 hours as a rule in each area. We flew from Saigon to Kanto by Caribou aircraft, and on the following day caught a Huey helicopter down to Bac Lieu, B-A-C-L-I-E-U, which is on the very southern section of the Delta. We then flew on the following day to the Haiyan province, which is on the very tip of the Delta, where a very famed figure called Father Hua operates. As a matter of fact, I believe he was portrayed in a recent movie called The Village That Wouldn't Die. While we were at Father Hua's, I went out with Chuck Falkingham, my psychology specialist teammate, on a night operation against the VC. We were with a company of Chinese troops and made no contact with the VC, of course, since the VC had more sense than to run into a well-armed company as we were. We set up a night ambush against the VC and waited in the darkness for about 4 or 5 hours along a main canal. It was expected that the VC would be retreating along that canal due to an operation slightly to the southwest of where we were positioned. It seemed to me at the time that this was rather ridiculous, since the VC generally don't retreat in massed groups. They generally break up their attacks, scattering in all directions. While we were out that evening, however, the VC fired upon Father Hua's compound where we were spending the night. Because of this incident, the guards were very uneasy, and sitting on the walls, they kept searchlights probing the darkness in the vicinity. On the way back in, we tried to establish radio contact to get them to turn off the searchlights. Had a very difficult time doing it. Finally, the company traipsed in single file, and on our way along a narrow embankment bordered on each side by a canal, one of the guards shined a searchlight right down the ranks of the company, and had there been any VC in the area, one machine gun could have wiped out the whole company. The following day, we caught a Huey helicopter on to Vitan, V-I-T-H-A-N-H, also in the Mekong Delta. A few kilometers from where we were staying, a large-scale VC operation was going on, which had just inflicted a large number of casualties, the number of which supposedly is classified. The place was in utter confusion. MAG compound in which we were staying was not guarded by Vietnamese troops as it should have been. The SDC, supplied by the Vietnamese for our security, had all gone absent without leave. Guard duty was being pulled by majors and captains of the U.S. Army, which is a rather rare sight indeed. It was agreed by the guards that if the VC had a mortar in the area with 2 or 3 rounds, they could blow us all sky high. We spent a rather uneasy night, to say the least, and our only source of comfort lay in the hope that perhaps the VC weren't really particularly interested in killing Americans anyway. There's probably some truth in this, because certainly the aid offered by Americans to Vietnam is very nearly as profitable to the VC as it is to the Vietnamese. Though I certainly submit that there's a rather subtle differentiation between the VC and the Vietnamese. From Vietnam, Major Sweeney and I left Major Christ and Specialist Falkingham and flew on down to Camau. There we went through a number of medical installations and saw a number of wounded that were being brought in from an operation a few miles away. One of the patients brought in was supposedly a Vietnamese farmer who had been shot by a 30 caliber machine gun in the stomach. Why he was alive, I don't really know. On the way in, they spent a lot of time interrogating him, trying to find whether he was VC or Vietnamese. This is rather a moot point, it seems to me, since some of the SDC, supposedly Vietnamese forces, are made up of men who are VC one day and SDC the next. Ultimately, the man admitted that he was a VC. From Vietnam, Major Sweeney and I flew back to Saigon and awaited the arrival of Major Christ and Specialist Falkingham. We spend almost every spare moment making out extensive dictated reports though precisely what we're looking for still seems to escape me. It's very easy in a situation like this, where the exact direction you're going in is rather obscure, to spend an awful lot of time gathering useless data, and it is my impression that this is what we do an awful lot of the time. Some of the reports seem to run rather like a travelogue, though there is no doubt some useful information in them, but I wonder who's going to spend the time going over the monstrous amounts of reports we're making to ferret out the useful bits. My protestations have availed me little when I've spoken to Major Sweeney and Major Kreiss about trying to establish a clearer direction for the study. After I received your letter saying that Tony Lake was here, I went to the embassy and found his home phone number and address. I called him and went to dinner with him on Friday night. He and his very pregnant wife at this point seem very happy and well settled here. Tony is Ambassador Lodge's special aide, and he screens everything in the form of communications and appointments and so forth that come into the ambassador before the ambassador sees them. As a result, he's probably one of the best informed people in the agency, in the embassy, I mean. He was apparently handpicked for this job and finds himself working very hard, but seems to find the work very gratifying. Today being Sunday, we were going to have an afternoon football game on the lawn of his embassy-provided villa. However, I had long last succumbed to the Saigon cold or virus or whatever it is and had been laid up in bed for a couple of days. In a day or two, Major Sweeney and Major Kreiss, especially Falkingham, and I are heading up north, hoping to spend some time with some Special Forces aid detachments and some MedCap teams. When I return, I'll probably get in touch with Tony again. He lives only about a 5-minute walk from my hotel here. I'm finding this mission a little emotionally stressful for a number of reasons, partly because of its lack of direction and also the insecurity of our frequent positioning, and also the viruses and infections that somehow it seems impossible to avoid picking up, especially out in the boonies where it's impossible to get hold of any clean drinking water and so forth. Perhaps after a month or so, I'll be immune to everything. I've been eating pretty much on the economy and not being exceptionally careful about what I eat and drink. Most Americans in this theater seem to prefer to live in sterile plastic bags. They, whenever possible, do not eat Vietnamese food, and they have very little contact with the Vietnamese people. Most of them, by and large, have very little to keep them busy, and they spend their time alone or together or drinking beer or listening to hi-fi sets with the volume turned up full until the wee hours of morning. This, of course, is primarily the U.S. military, with which I've had most association. Seeing the military in operation over here has served primarily to offer more disenchantment for me with the military. Major Sweeney and Kreiss are trying to talk me into accepting a commission and then going on with the project, perhaps to South America or wherever. But I'm not thinking about it very seriously, though I hesitate to indicate in a point-blank manner that the Army is not for me. During our trip through the Delta, I took along a very fine 8mm movie camera that I purchased and took a number of movies. I've already sent 10 rolls home to Mother, and she should have received some of them by the time you get this belt. I wish somebody would look at them and see how they're coming out so that I can make any necessary adjustments. They should be pretty good because I've got a good camera with an automatic aperture. They're taken out of helicopters and of strategic hamlets and various U.S. operations, as well as whatever else you see as you walk through the Vietnamese countryside. If you get home, be sure and take a look at them and let me know how they're coming out. They should serve as a pretty good record of our travels. They will, by the way, arrive at home having been developed by the Kodak processing labs in Washington. Perhaps one of the most interesting contacts I've made over here is that of Dr. Gerald C. Hickey, who for 2 or 3 years was professor of Southeast Asian Studies at Yale. He speaks French and Vietnamese fluently, is an anthropologist, and is working on a project for the RAND Corporation. He's one of the very few people who has a really close contact with the Vietnamese people over here, and who has a pretty good idea of what's going on. I sometimes get the impression that my association with the military or being a Spec 4 in the Army confounds my attempts to get out and see anything really significant. It also has substantial effect upon my social maneuverability. I saw quite a bit of Dr. Hickey when I first got here, and one day he suggested that I should come with him to a posh French club here in Saigon and meet some Vietnamese friends of his. He said that he didn't particularly want to invite Major Sweeney and Price because of the military rank hierarchy. Dr. Hickey is very much disenchanted with the military, by and large. On the afternoon that we were supposed to go to the club, he and I were sitting at a hotel terrace restaurant with our bathing suits in our hands. Major Christ came up and joined us and asked what our plans were, and soon managed to inveigle an invitation out of Dr. Hickey. The result was that the whole team ended up going to the club with Dr. Hickey. And I began to realize that I couldn't move on my own, but had to drag the team along with me. This sort of grate. When I was first selected for this mission, I was told that one of the reasons that I was given the job was because I could talk to people that Majors Sweeney and Christ could not talk to because of their officer status. I get the impression that that's fine as long as I can talk to people like lower-ranking enlisted men more effectively than they can. But if in the event that I'm invited to some social function that is considered upper echelon, I'm not permitted to proceed on my own. Dr. Hickey has frequently warned many U.S. people, military and civilian, coming into this area, that the best way to proceed is to take it easy and not rush around in the traditional American fashion. He constantly emphasizes the importance of being willing to sit back and relax and take a drink and think for a while before proceeding to the next venture. As someone who has followed his own philosophy, he certainly seems to have profited by this approach, since he is one of the very few who really seems to have a good idea of what's going on over here. Major Sweeney and Christ and the rest of the U.S. military in general seem completely unwilling to heed his advice, however. The result seems to me to be almost universally this wasteful haste that never seems to lead to anything really profitable or informative. Since I have endless reports to go over and many more to dictate, I had better close. Let me know as soon as you can whether or not you were able to get a machine to listen to belts of this sort, and if you do have a machine available, I'll send frequent reports on what's going on. Say to the belts that I send, and because I'll be interested in listening to them and reviewing the situation in retrospect. Although this mission may not be headed in a really profitable direction, I shall at worst obtain at least a very educational experience. I must confess, however, that the high-pressure operations that make up this mission make me wish that there was some other way that I could see the situation here in Vietnam from some other vantage point. And I think that when my 3 months are up, I'm going to be looking forward to coming home. Send me at least a card right away so that I can know for sure that you have got a machine to listen to this stuff, and I'll send on other material as soon as I get a chance. But since I have so much work to do, meaningless or not, it'll have to be all for now.